Welcome to episode 4 of Hyperchange Breaking News, reporting live from Atlantis. Our first story today comes from Reddit, one of the hottest IPOs in the market right now. Reddit's being valued at about $10 billion after its IPO in initial trading here. 73 million daily active users, 276 million weekly active users, 100,000 plus community, a billion posts. Reddit is a community of communities. Really exciting to see the IPO market sort of heat up here. And have a good response to, you know, a tech, social media, social networking play.
Yeah, this is huge for Silicon Valley. This is a company 19 years in the making, went through YC, and has shown that they can build a real business and, you know, grow a platform that is able to be justified in the market. It's up 30% since its IPO, which is really exciting. If we get into the user growth, I mean, it appears to be moving up and to the right still. But if you look under the hood here, you can see that while the daily active users are growing, the monthly active users seem to be kind of leveling out just a bit at around 800 million. So yeah, it's hard to know sometimes if these companies kind of fudge the numbers to juice them in certain ways and what they lead with. But it's interesting to note that Reddit has such a big difference between their daily active users and their monthly active users.
Yeah, and the pop in daily active users that we're not seeing on subreddits or monthly active users is super duper interesting. So is there some gamification heading into the IPO to send a few more notifications and get people to click on them to pump up those daily active user numbers? My guess is maybe. And another signal that Reddit may be sort of flatlining here is average revenue per user down 2% year over year, first year over year decline in the data we have. So, you know, I don't know. Is Reddit's growth story as strong as they're sort of making it out to be?
Yeah, that's interesting. Like their ad revenue, like Reddit as a platform, is very words driven. It's not necessarily image and video. And so the ability for advertisers to plop in an image, plop in a video, and communicate is a bit more difficult on Reddit because it's just less natural to have images and videos in there. So I think that's like been maybe a reason why the ad revenue hasn't taken quite off like maybe people expected. But with that said, the business did $800 million in revenue last year, up from just $666 million the year before that. So they're putting up big numbers, and that's how they've been able to justify such a strong IPO.
Solid top line, 20% growth there, but $10 billion, $800 million in sales, over 10 times price sales multiple for 20% growth that I might add is unprofitable. Seems a little rich. You know, Reddit's getting valued as kind of like an it company with a lot of growth potential, essentially. But I would point to the fact that a loss of $140 million in income from operations, you know, almost a negative 20% operating margin, slightly improved from negative $172 million the year before. But negative 20% operating margins is not going to cut it if you want to maintain a 10 times price sales ratio. We need to see them figure out their margin profile and continue to grow at least 20%, in my opinion, if they want to justify this valuation.
What's crazy is they're spending nearly half a billion dollars on R&D, which just seems like very aggressive for a product that hasn't really changed that much in the last few years. So I'm really wondering like where that money is going. And they have such a big user base of data that would be really good for AI. So I think that kind of unlocks a lot of potential if they can take that user base and start selling it to various LLMs and do partnerships there. So that could unlock future revenue. And as you said, they've been very unprofitable, but it's moving in the right direction. So as we go into 2024, maybe they can start to have a profitable quarter coming up soon. And I think that would be really good for the stock to show kind of, you know, cut the fat from the business.
And the AI moonshot you mentioned is super interesting. Like, is that going to, you know, are they going to be able to pull off licensing their treasure trove of unique data to an OpenAI, to a Grok? Will that be hundreds of millions, if not billions, in cash flow from the data pile they're sitting on? I think that's part of the reason the valuation is looking a little bit rich right now based on the current financials, is there's a pricing in of this sort of X factor data play with AI taking off. So going to be a great one to follow. I love Reddit personally, so this is a cool one that IPO'd. And now, this kills me as a Tesla shareholder, but estimates for Tesla's Q1 deliveries have been dropping rapidly. Let's just say what it is here. Heading into the quarter, we were expecting about 460,000 deliveries. That would have been up about 10%. up from about 422,000 in Q1 last year. So that is the number to beat, 422,000. Prediction marketplace Kalshi has recently opened up their Tesla deliveries predictions, and they're saying 412,000 is the estimate right now, according to the crowdsource market. And that's down significantly, as you can see from the chart. So, you know, Model Y price cuts, Q1 is seasonally weak. I don't know. This is going to be, this 412,000 units would be a shrinkage year over year from Tesla's delivery numbers. And I think that could spook investors a little. So this is very interesting to know. And Tesla, you got to remember, the Model Y is the best selling car in the world last year. They have saturated their markets. This is as much about Tesla as it is about the overall consumer market as a whole, the appetite for EVs, the appetite for big purchases. This is a barometer for that entire segment of the economy. And so just a very interesting delivery number from Tesla coming up that's going to get announced in the next week or so.
Do you think we're going to continue to see declining in deliveries throughout the course of the year? What do you think is going to kind of bring it back up again?
Great question. I think we got a very interesting clue from Martin Viecha, the investor relations analyst or investor relations officer at Tesla, a couple weeks or maybe months ago, when he said Tesla's in between two major growth waves right now. You know, you see these massive growth waves with Model S and X, and then they kind of plateau as they reach maturity in those markets. Model 3 and Y, they're kind of plateau and reach maturity. So I think that's what's happened here. Tesla scaled from a pipsqueak to 2 million cars delivered a year. And until they roll out a cheaper car, it's going to be tough to grow beyond that. So I think we're going to be looking at about a flattish year, maybe low growth, especially if the Cybertruck production can take off. They have a huge demand there. So that could really provide some growth in the back half of the year. But if interest rates stay high, it's going to be difficult for them to grow significantly this year. I think you're really betting on growth with the cheaper $25,000 car coming out in about 2 years.
Or potentially the Tesla Semi. I mean, that is getting me incredibly excited as an investor. You know, 6 million truck drivers in the U.S. I don't know when the Semi is going to start to really get mainstream, but that seems like that could be the thing that really ramps up the vehicle deliveries in the long run.
Definitely. Seems to be going slow, but in the long run, the potential is massive. And then in other Tesla news, this was a pretty crazy move. Elon Musk emailing people that FSD version 12.3, everyone who gets a new vehicle delivered is going to get a test ride of FSD. They're going to give everybody rides. He knows it's going to slow the delivery process. I love this idea because you get your Tesla, speaking from experience, you pick up your Tesla, you have no idea what to do with it. The guy just leaves and you're like, oh my God, I have this new like crazy supercar with an app and this is crazy. And so I just think getting a little bit more hands-on experience at delivery, showing people the power of FSD, game changer. And this means Elon and the team think FSD is pretty good if they want everyone to try it.
Yeah, I mean, I just love that. Letting the product speak for itself just seems like the clearest way to be a product-first company. And they've been training FSD for so long. We just kind of said that it had its ChatGPT moment where everyone on Twitter who has been using FSD 12.3 have just been kind of wowed with it. So this is really exciting. I love this tweet by Whole Mars Blog about maybe some business models that Tesla could explore on a per use basis, per mile. And this could be something where they just is really a win-win for both the customer and Tesla. And right now, FSD is costing about $12,000, which is a lot of money. And so this is a way for them to get more users on it using FSD.
And in our next piece of news, Starlink. 6,000 Starlinks in orbit, launching every 5 days. Aiden, what are we looking at here?
Yeah, this is a super cool video that just was released about and website that you can now track all the different Starlinks in orbit. I just think this is an incredibly awesome view of Earth and just watching how the Starlink constellation is really like around our planet now. And Starlink plans to have 12,000 of these. They're approaching 6,000, like you said. So it's the business of Starlink is really maturing, just over $3.5 billion in revenue. And yeah, this I don't think people fully grasp once you're able to get Starlink Wi-Fi to your phone directly, how big of a business line this is really going to be. And yeah, launching every 5 days, they're really laying the groundwork right now.
2.6 million or so customers is what we're reading. That represents about 2.5 to 3 billion in recurring revenue just from subscriptions of subscribers of Starlink, growing insanely quickly. Like you said, the cell feature could add even more growth. I mean, I think we're looking at a business that would be worth 50 to 100 billion if it IPO'd today. So much speculation about when SpaceX will spin this out. Now that Reddit's showing the IPO market's coming back, I think a Starlink IPO is going to happen. It's just a matter of when. And the stronger that, the more time they get to just build up the financials, the better and better it's going to be in terms of valuation. I think my take now is it's never going to IPO under 100 billion. Because revenue is already in the few billions, scaling quickly. This becomes a super high margin company with just an absurd moat once this really gets into production here.
Yeah, it's really hard to see anyone going to like compete with Starlink. Once you have 12,000 satellites in the sky and you own like the SpaceX, the launch provider, yeah, this seems like a moat. Starlink might be the internet company for Earth. So really hard to
put it down. Mars.
And Mars, and hard to put the value on that, you know, like the infrastructure that goes into that. I agree with you. This is a 100 billion plus company at IPO.
Neuralink. Then we got Neuralink. Exciting news. Big momentum after last week.
They used that kind of eyeballs and marketing to reopen up their patient registry, which was launched in September 23, but they also expanded it to Canada. So now anyone with like ALS, any surgical spine issues, can apply to the Neuralink registry, which is going to be great for recruiting for their PRIME study clinical trial, which is a huge issue for a lot of biotech companies that always kind of have to struggle to find patients. And with Elon Musk's marketing skills and what they were able to show last week, this is really going to speed up the process to find patients that might be a good fit for the Neuralink product.
Ooh, our next piece of news. This is pretty crazy. Michael Saylor owns 1% of Bitcoin or controls it through his company MicroStrategy. So I had to triple check when I read this, but as of March 18th, MicroStrategy holds 214,246 Bitcoin. So that means it's over 1% of the 21 million that will ever get created. As a Bitcoin holder myself, I don't know. This freaks me out a little bit. The whole vision is decentralized, distributed. Now that Michael Saylor owns over 1%, I mean, that is, this might be the biggest Bitcoin holder in the world. It seems like he just keeps wanting to buy more. If he had to sell half of this or even a quarter of it, it could totally tank the market overnight. So I personally, I mean, big fan of Michael Saylor. He's been on the channel and he's obviously just crushing it by every stretch of the word here and has just been a Bitcoin OG and that's paying off. But I don't know. What's the end game here?
Yeah, I mean, clearly he's up, right? His average price is 35,000 Bitcoin. But like you're saying, he's using convertible notes to buy the Bitcoin. If Bitcoin has a massive drawdown, could that cause issues and a massive sell-off? But he was able to survive the last cycle. He first invested in August 10th, 2020. So he dealt with the 2022 crash. So it seems to be fairly resilient. And now with BlackRock and their Bitcoin ETF, it's one of their fastest growing ETFs in history. There seems to be so much demand. And I mean, Michael Saylor could be really onto something big here with only 1%. And he really sees this as not just like a once in a lifetime opportunity, but this is once in a civilization's kind of history. And this is a defining moment. And he's certainly betting with his wallet here.
Full YOLO.
Full YOLO. Sure. Speaking of gold money, Robinhood just came out with their gold platform, which comes with a gold credit card. This is one of the credit cards actually gold, which is pretty crazy. It gives you 3% cash back. 5% cash back on travel. People seem to be really excited about this in the market. And yeah, this was a card company they bought for just $90 million just about a year ago, I believe. So they're putting that to good use very quickly, which is super exciting. And yeah, 3% match on your IRA, 1% match on all deposits. I mean, I don't know where Robinhood's getting all this money, but this is incredibly lucrative for customers. And supposedly the CEO, Vlad, said they had hundreds of thousands of people sign up just since their announcement on Tuesday. So clearly, like, people are excited about this opportunity from a customer perspective.
The exosphere is buzzing, that's for sure. You know, a lot of momentum here for Robinhood. Really interesting expansion into new financial services, frankly. So props. Meta paying a dividend? Who saw that coming? Meta big time growing up as a company here is they're actually issuing cash back to shareholders, not just in terms of a buyback, but literally paying out guap. Extremely profitable company, rock solid balance sheet, 50 cents a share. That's $2 a year on a $500 stock. You're looking at less than 0.5% dividend yield. But this is a big, big moment. Big tech showing the dividend is not fully out of style yet.
And it's a big moment for Zuck too. $700 million a year in payout. I mean, that's just a massive dividend to be getting for a CEO. And yeah, Zuck's only 39 years old, and his best years might be ahead of him.
I mean, his Wagyu macadamia farm in Hawaii is getting a big cash injection, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
And in some less good news, but pretty important news, Baltimore Bridge is falling down.
Yeah, this was crazy. A cargo ship ran into a bridge. I've never seen that. There's a video of watching the bridge collapse, which is pretty jarring to watch. This has made the Baltimore port, which is the 12th largest port in the U.S., completely inaccessible. That's disrupting billions of dollars in global trade. And I think you see this tweet from Mark Andreessen here. Will this bridge ever be replaced, and how much will it cost? And he's saying it may never be replaced. And we really need to, this should be a wake-up call that this is something that we need to invest in.
And this really hits home on sort of our biggest theme of what we've been discussing, which is the U.S. government spending seems out of control. And it seems like we have unlimited money for stuff that doesn't matter, but like stuff that really makes an everyday difference, like building the bridge, is really hard to fix or incentivize. But then we have this other news. So it's funny, you see, it's like this Baltimore bridge is crumbling. We don't know how to fix it. But we just gave $6 billion to decarbonize heavy industry, which sounds good on the surface. But when you dive down into where the money's going, and how efficiently it's actually going to get used, I don't know. I wasn't feeling too good about it.
Yeah, it's going to old industrial players like Exxon and Dow, who might have caused these chemical issues in the first place, and they have the relationships with the government. So it is exciting to see them kind of getting capital to hopefully change their ways and decarbonize heavy industry. But it would have been maybe better to see a lot more capital flow to early stage startups that are doing innovative approaches instead of kind of maybe just trying to move slightly in the right direction.
Yeah, for sure. And we've got an update on Boom Supersonic here.
So Boom took flight for the very first time. This has been 10 years in the making, supersonic jet. It did not go supersonic speed, but it did validate safety. It was able to take off. So that is incredibly exciting. And this jet uses cleaner fuel than typical airlines. So that's also good for a sustainable play. And hopefully their quality of airplanes could one day be better than Boeing. So this is one of the few companies that we're tracking that has a real shot at building the next big like airline manufacturer in the U.S. So it's one that we're watching closely.
Well, moving to our startup of the week, PicoGrid. What are we looking at here? What makes the Pico team so special?
So right now there's tons of defense contractors that are providing, you know, equipment to the military, but these are all disconnected. And so what PicoGrid is trying to do is create a centralized repository for all these autonomous systems to be kind of worked on in one place. And the government seems to value that a lot. The Air Force gave them a contract up to $950 million to work on this. So clearly there's some demand from the U.S.
Fascinating. We'll see if they can execute with all that guap. And AI image of the week.
What are we seeing here, Gally?
Well, we're seeing sort of an anime-style futuristic city getting a little bit of Totoro energy. But maybe you could drop some wisdom on what we're looking at.
To me, this feels like the small little thing holds so much power. And I think that there's a lot of power in, you know, our semiconductors, which are incredibly tiny, our ability to edit DNA and raw materials. And so, yeah, I think it's just a reminder that some of the most powerful things in the world, you can't even really see, and they're like this, a very tiny size.
Awesome. Well, on that note, we're wrapping up this week's episode of HyperChange Breaking News. We'll see y'all next week. Let us know what you thought of the show, what we should cover, any ideas, any schemes. We're all ears. Love listening to your feedback and trying to improve the show. So thank y'all for tuning in.